Blog Talk Radio.
Constitution of the knowing faculty and the
whatever pursuit we are engaged in, we are acting consciously or unconsciously upon some theory, some view of things. And when the limits of daily routine are continually narrowed by the ever-increasing complication of our civilization, it becomes doubly important that not one only, but every kind of thought should be shared in. There are two ways of passing beyond the domain of practical certainty and of looking into a vast range of possibility. One is by asking, what is knowledge? What constitutes experience? If we adopt this course, we are plunged into a sea of speculation. Were it not that the highest faculties of the mind might therein so ample a range, we should return to the solid ground of facts, with simply a feeling of relief at escaping from so great a confusion and contradictoriness. I believe this was probably written in 1884 based on the there is a book, Scientific Romances, Volume 1, 1884, copy text 1 to 22, Speculations on the Fourth Dimension, selected writings of Charles H. Hinton, and then it was copyrighted 1980 by Dover Publications. So, I'm not really sure of the origin of this. However, it definitely 19th century writing. There are two ways of passing beyond the domain of practical certainty and looking into the vast range of possibility. I just read that. The other path, which leads us beyond the horizon of actual experience, is that of questioning whatever seems arbitrary and irrationally limited in the domain of knowledge. Such a questioning has often been successfully applied in the search for new facts. For a long time, four gases were considered incapable of being reduced to the liquid state. It is but lately that a physicist has succeeded in showing that there is no such arbitrary distinction among gases. Recently again, the question has been raised, is there not a fourth state of matter? Solid, liquid, and gaseous states are known. Well, Mr. Kurtz attempts to demonstrate the existence of a state differing from all of these. It is the object of these pages to show that, by supposing away certain limitations of the fundamental conditions of existence as we know it, a state of being can be conceived with powers far transcending our own. When this is made clear, it will not be out of place to investigate what relations would subsist between our mode of existence and that which we will be seen to be a possible one. In the first place, what is the limitation that we must suppose away? An observer standing in the corner of a room has three directions naturally marked out for him. One is upward along the line of meeting two walls. Another is forward where the floor meets one of the walls. A third is sideways where the floor meets the other wall. He can proceed to any part of the floor of the room by moving first the right distance along one wall and then by turning at right angles and walking parallel to the other wall. He walks in this case first of all in the direction of one of the straight lines that meets in the corner of the floor, afterwards in the direction of the other. By going more or less in one direction or the other, he can reach any point on the floor in any movement, however circuitous, can be resolved into simple movements in these two directions. But by moving in these two directions, he is unable to raise himself in the room. If he wished to touch a point at the ceiling, he would have to move in the direction of the line in which the two walls meet. There are three directions, then, each at right angles to both the other, and entirely independent of one another. By moving in these three directions, or combinations of them, it is possible to arrive at any point in the room. And if we suppose the straight line, which meet in the corner of the room, to be prolonged indefinitely, It would be possible by moving in the direction of those three lines to arrive at any point in space. Thus, in space, there are three independent directions and only three. Every other direction is compounded of these three. The question that comes before us, then, is this. Why should there be three and only three directions? Space, as we know it, is subject to a limitation. In order to obtain an adequate conception of what this limitation is, it is necessary to first imagine being existing in a space more limited than that in which we move. Thus, we can conceive a being who has been throughout all the range of his experience confined to a single straight line. Such a being would know what it was to move to and fro, but no more. The whole of space would be to him but the existence in both directions of a straight line to an infinite distance. It is evident that two such creatures should never pass one another. We can conceive their coming out of this straight line and entering it again, but they having moved away in one straight line would have no conception of any other direction of motion by which such a result could be affected. And the only shape which could exist in one-dimensional existence of this kind would be a finite straight line. There would be no differences in the shapes and figures. All that could exist would simply be longer or shorter straight lines. And so, you know, it's interesting that he talks about that, because if we look at so many people we know can only work in a straight line, they're very linear in their thinking. And, and we see this in the political world right now, where the linear thinkers are dominating the Republican Party. And the Tea Party and the gross limitations of their imaginations is so absurd. It's either, you know, they can only see, you can't go forward unless you go back. You know, it's like they only know forward and backward is better than forward. And it's like, you know, it's absolutely crazy. But that's the problem with two and three dimensional existences, that, you know, we're really, we can't see. In order to obtain an adequate conception of what this limitation is, it's necessary to first imagine beings existing in a space more limited than that in which we move. Thus, we may conceive a being who has been throughout all the range of his experience confined to a single straight line. Such a being would know what it was to move to and fro, but not more. The whole of space would be to him but the extension in both directions of a straight line to a finite distance. It is evident that two such creatures could never pass one another. I just read this, but I thought it was interesting to read it again, just to emphasize. The only shape which would exist in a one-dimensional existence of this kind would be a finite straight line. There would be no difference in shapes or figures. All that could exist would simply be longer or shorter. So, and again, that's all people tend to see. So many people just tend to see that they either go forward or backward, and there's no difference. There's no delineation between the two. There's no, you know, it's forward, backward, that's it. And again, to go a step higher in the domain of conceivable existence, suppose the being confined to a plane suffices and throughout all of the range of its experience, never to have moved up or down, but simply to have kept to this one plane. There are many, many people who have done that. Suppose that is some figure, such as a circle or a rectangle, to be endowed with the power of perception. Such a being, if it moves in the plane suffices in which it is drawn, will move in a multitude of directions, but however varied they may seem to be, the his directions will all be compounded of two, at right angles to each other. But no movement so long as the plane suffices remains perfectly horizontal. Will this being move in the direction we call up and down? And it is important to notice that the plane would be different to a creature confined to it from what it is to us. We think of plane habitually as having an upper and lower side, because it is only by the contacts of solids that we realize a plane. But a creature which has been confined to a plane during its whole existence would have no idea of being two sides to the plane he lived in. In a plane, there is simply length and breadth. If a creature in it be supposed to know of an up or down, he must already have gone out of the plane. And as difficult as this may be in language, because of course it's a century old or more than almost 150 years old, but it's so true, because so many people operate in this plane, this simple linear concept of moving forward or backward, one left to right, right to left, forward to backward. It's a simple, it's that, it's a right angle or, left, it's a right angle, basically. And, no matter what you're doing, these people can't think out of the box. They can't go any higher than that, right? So when some politician comes along, somebody comes along and speaks basic, simple, straightforward answers like, this is that and so on and so on and so on and so on. Right is right and left is left and, onward and onward. That's all they can understand. So they can't understand any further, and they think every other nuance of thought is irrelevant, all right? So these people are so two-dimensional that it's frightening. They're not even third-dimensional in their thinking. And we see that every day now, every day. It is possible, then, that a creature so circumstanced would arrive at the notion of there being an up and down, a direction different from those to which he had been accustomed, and having nothing in common with them. Obviously, nothing in the creature's circumstance would tell him of it. It could be by a process of reasoning on his part that he could arrive at such a conception. If he were to imagine a being confined to a single straight line, he might realize that he himself could move in two directions, while a creature in a straight line could only move in one. And having made that reflection, he might ask, but why is the number of directions limited to two? Why should there not be three? Ba-boom. Hello. Welcome to the two-party political system. Welcome to the right and left, paradigm. Welcome to the Hegelian concepts of, divide and conquer. We cannot, unless you can understand there's greater than two, all right, then, forget about it. A creature, if such existed, which moved in a plane, would be much more fortunate circumstance than one that can only move in a straight line. For in a plane, there is a possibility of an infinite variety of shapes, and the being we have supposed could all come into contact with an indefinite number of other beings. He would not be limited, as in the case of the creature in a straight line, to one only on each side of him. It is obvious that it would be possible to play curious tricks with a being confined to a plane. If, for instance, we suppose such a being to be inside a square, the only way out that he could conceive would be through one of the sides of the square. If his side were impenetrable, he would be a fast prisoner, would have no way out. So, and that's exactly what people two-dimensional thinking is about, basically. I mean, even three-dimensional thinking, I mean, it's back, forth, distance, height, that's it. But you're in a box. You're think of yourself in a cube and not being able to expand your thoughts, okay? And there's two, there's only a right or a left or an up or a down, and that's it. But there's no around. There's no thought given to anything other than that. So humanity is so frustrated because they cannot think out of the box. And it's time to start thinking out of the box, thinking into the fourth dimensional state. All right. And until we can do that and continue to do that and place ourselves in that fourth dimensional state where all possibilities are available to you, then will we excel and ascend to that fourth dimensional state, which is far, far, far superior to our present condition. It is obvious that it would be possible to play curious tricks, okay, on people, and they do. They do constantly. People who understand how the average man thinks, okay, people who are living in the fourth dimensional state, fifth dimensional states, if you will, people who are so far advanced in their thinking processes, play people like a fiddle, right? Because they understand, and they understand how confined they are and how foolish they are. So they manipulate them, and that manipulation becomes, unfortunately, our political system. And our political system operates in this two-dimensional plane. With shallow politicians and shallow concepts and foolish concepts and stupidity beyond belief. All right. What his case would be, we may understand if we reflect what a similar case would be in our own existence. The creature is such in all the directions he knows of a man. If a man is shut in all the directions he knows of, he must be surrounded by four walls, a roof, and a floor. A two-dimensional being inside a square would be exactly in the same predicament that a man would be if he were in a room with no opening on any side. Now, it would be possible for us to take up such a being from this inside of the square and to set him down outside it. A being to whom this had happened would find himself outside the place he had been confined in, and he would not have passed through any of the boundaries by which he was shut in. The astonishment of such a being can only be imagined by comparing it to that which a man would feel if he were suddenly to find himself outside a room in which he had been without having pass through the windows, doors, chimney, or any opening in the wall, ceiling, or floor. Just imagine yourself walking through a wall, you know, that you have no resistance to anything, you know, and this is fourth dimensional existence. Everything, there is no time or space. There is no barriers. You know, you're spiritual. Another curious thing that could be affected with a two-dimensional being is the following. Conceive two beings at a great distance from one another on a plane surface. If the plane surface is bent so that they are brought close to one another, they would have no conception of their proximity, because to each the only possible movement would seem to be movements in the surface. The two beings might be conceived as so placed by a proper bending of the plane, that they should be absolutely in juxtaposition. And yet, to all the reasoning facilities of either of them, a great distance could be proved to intervene. The bending might be carried to so far as to make one being suddenly appear in the plane by the side of the other. If these beings were ignorant of the existence of a third dimension, this result would be as marvelous to them as it would be to a human being who was at a great distance. It might be at the other side of the world, so suddenly appear and really be by our side, and during the whole time he not have the left, have left the place in which he was. So what we're saying is that if you can think outside of space and time, then you can be immediately with somebody else or some place without having even moved, right? Why? Because that place is there. That place is in your mind, right? Visually, you can visualize it and be there, right? That's fourth dimensional thinking. You know, you can create something that has never been created before because you can think ahead. You can think out of the box. You can think in a fourth dimensional existence, right? As opposed to a two or three dimensional plane, which is so limited. Constructing a four square. The four square example make it clear that being can be conceived as living in a more limited space than ours. Is there a similar limitation in the space we know? At the very threshold of arithmetic, an indication of such a limitation meets us. If there is a straight line before us, 2 inches long, its length is expressed by the number 2. Suppose a square to be described on the line, the number of square inches in this figure is expressed in the number 4, i.e., 2 by 2, all right, 2 times 2. This 2 times 2 is generally written 2 to the second power and named 2 squared. Now, of course, the arithmetical process of multiplication is in no sense identical with that process by which a square is generated from the motion of a straight line or a cube from the motion of a square. But it has been observed that the units resulting in each case, though different in kind, are the same in number. If we touch two things twice over, the act of touching has been performed 4 times. Arithmetically, 2 times 2 equals 4. If a square is generated by the motion of a line 2 inches in length, the square contains 4 inches square. So, it has come to pass that the second and third powers of numbers are called square and cube. We have now a straight line. 2 inches long. And this square has been constructed containing 4 square inches. Okay. If on that same line a cube is constructed, the number of cubic inches is the figure so made as 8, i.e. 2 by 2 by 2, or 2 to the third power. Here are the corresponding to the numbers 2 and 2 to the second and 2 to the third power, we have a series of figures. Each figure contains more units than the last, and in each the unit is of a different kind. In the first figure, a straight line is the unit, and one linear inch, it is said to be of one dimension. In the second, a square is the unit, 1 square inch. The square is a figure of 2 dimensions. In the third case, a cube is the unit, and a cube is of 3 dimensions. And you can understand, if you just take one, you know, A to B is a straight line. Now you go A to B to C to D, that's a square, right? It's still 2 dimensional. But the minute you go from A to B to C to D to E, F, G, and H, you're creating this cube, right? 2 times 2 times 2 times 2. You've created a cube. You've created a third dimensional drawing. Okay. And no number of squares will make up a cube because each square has no thickness. In the same way, no number of cubes must be able to make up this new unit. And here, instead of trying to confine something already known to which the idea of a figure corresponding to the fourth power can be affixed, let us simply reason out what the properties of such a figure must be. In this attempt, we have to rely on not on a process of touching our vision, such as informs us of the properties of bodies in the space we know, but on the process of thought. Each fact concerning this unknown figure has to be reasoned out, and it is only after a number of steps have been gone through that any consistent familiarity with its properties is obtained. Of all applications of the reason, this exploration is perhaps the one which requires, for the simplicity of the data involved, the greatest exercise of abstract imagination, and on this account is well worth patient attention. The first steps are very simple. We must imagine a finite straight line to generate a square by moving to the plane of the paper. And this square is in turn to generate a cube by moving vertically upwards and represents a straight line. Okay? And then represents a square formed by the motion of that straight line. And then in figure 3, which I'm looking at, represents perspectively a cube formed by the motion of that square. And A, B, C, D upwards, it would be well, instead of using figure 3, which is A, B, C, which is a simple cube, which to place a cube on the paper, its base would be A, B, C, D, its upper surface, E, F, G, H. Okay? So, you know, I don't know if... back in my college years, I remember being fascinated by the cube. Don't ask me why. I recall sitting in a lecture once. It had nothing to do with math or cubes or anything else. But I remember sitting there. I think it was a history class on something. And I suddenly started to doodle. And I could doodle. I was doodling cubes. I was making three-dimensional cubes. And on this paper that I had, I was creating cube after cube after cube after cube connected to the cube to see how far I could go and what things I could do. And it was infinite. Infinite I could see. But the pattern was becoming so geometrical that... For some reason, I'll never forget it. I just kept going. I must have made 1,000 cubes on that, you know, on several pieces of paper. Just kept making cubes, and I don't know why. And it seemed like I was creating my own little universe in there. That because each cube was a box, and each box was connected to the other box, and created a space in an empty space, and it kept, you know, getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, but that space I was creating within my own space, if you will, a depth, okay, to a two-dimensional plane, and it just fascinated me because there was no end to the depth that I could go with the cube. So that was my first real mathematical understanding, if you will, of a fourth dimension, because I was creating another dimension through this third dimensional expansion of nothing, of paper, basically. I was creating it in my mind. And we do this all the time. And it was no different than when I started, and it was at that point when I started to really get into art and start creating third dimensional space out of a two-dimensional plane, you know, creating depth and light with light. And it was until that I discovered the techniques of light, darkness, and 3D that I was able to first comprehend the fourth dimension. And that fourth dimension was there. It was like, oh my God, I've been operating in the fourth dimension all along. Because the fourth dimension is what created this third dimensional vortex, if you will, allowed me to see something that wasn't there. Allow me to create a vision on canvas or create, whatever it was, out of nothing, out of my mind, totally out of nothing. It had nothing to do with space or time. It was just a total vision, all right? Whatever colors or creation it was that I wanted to include, I did. It was just a marvelous experience. And because of that, I was able to tap in to that fourth dimensional experience, that fourth dimensional knowledge, that fourth dimensional aspect of creation. Right? And by doing that, I realized now, much many years later, what I was doing and what I kept pursuing. And as you create that third, that fourth dimensional existence of your own, unfortunately, you become further and further and further removed from a third-dimensional reality. What happens is that takes on a completely different aspect in relationships and everything you're doing, everything that you do. You suddenly, unless you realize that this is happening, you don't understand what's going on, and you just rebel to the fact that, hey, I'm an artist, you know. But an artist becomes so reclusive sometimes because they're operating in that fourth dimensional reality. I mean, tell me that Picasso was not a fourth dimensional creature, or tell me that surrealists were not, fourth, living, experience fourth dimensional existence. It's impossible. They were. Van Gogh was definitely a fourth dimensional. Gauguin, fourth dimensional. All the impressionists were visualizing the third dimension within the fourth dimensional concepts of their existence. They, expressing light and darkness and creating that perspective, seeing the third dimension from a fourth dimensional viewpoint. Totally insane. And that's what we become. Those of us who understand fourth dimensional existence understand that we are not the same as people in the third dimension, or even the people operating in the second dimension, in two dimensions. So many people are. So many people are just so two-dimensional. It's either black or white. It's either ahead or back. Nothing on the side except your arms. That doesn't mean anything. So nothing above you or below you, just simply in front of you or behind you. You're either a progressive or a conservative. Doesn't that ring a bell? But those who are in a fourth dimensional state of being, they're already there. They're already creating and understanding and knowing the things that will keep them straight, keep them alive, keep them prospering, if you will. It's just that they have to understand and they have to identify the fact that they're operating in fourth dimensional reality. And most people are not ready to accept that. I say, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Well, what I'm saying is that in the fourth dimensional plane, it's no different than creating that, being able to create a cube on paper on a two-dimensional plane. You're suddenly creating third-dimensional reality. And then as you're creating the third-dimensional reality, then you can create fourth-dimensional reality. Just add another cube to that. Add another cube in another place. Bring more depth to the thing. Add a triangle. Add whatever you want to add to it. Right? Because the geometry is infinite. It's infinite. Right? And each, though it's sacred geometry, but it's the building blocks of life. Okay? And that is what the fourth dimension is. Okay, it's what understand how to rise above this will understand that all of this is nothing more than a prison, right? This third dimensional existence is nothing but a prison to our spirits, to our evolution, to our ascension, to the oneness of being. So why are we prisoners? Why do we wish to remain here? Because we have these trappings that keep us here. We have family, friends. We have the sky, the sun, the moon, water, food, you know, all of these things that we like and love, right? And yes, we love them, and even within this third dimensional existence, we are allowed to expand, but only within that third dimensional plane. You can make money, you can have bigger houses, but everything is based upon what? Upon a cube, upon 3D, okay? It's not 4D. And once we establish our mindset to a fourth dimensional plane, then everything becomes useless to us. And I tell you why, because we will be able to manifest every single thing we want immediately. We don't need this physical time-space continuum to exist within. No, we don't. All we need is the idea. All we need is the focus of our mind on the objects that we wish to, we desire. Be it whatever, ever, it's infinite what mankind would want, right? And we do it now. We do it now individually. We are doing it now. But it's to understand that. It's to understand what we're doing. To understand that we have the power. We are as unable to imagine it as a creature living in a plane. Figure 2 would be a figure which is a square. Would be to imagine a direction that the moving in it, the square 2 would become the cube 3. The third dimension to such a creature would be as unintelligible as the fourth is to us. And at this point, we have to give up the aid that is not got from a presentable object, and we have simply to investigate what the properties of the simplest figure in four dimensions are. By pursuing further the analogy, which we know to exist between the process of formation of 2 from 1 and of 3 from 2 and finally of 4 from 3. For the sake of convenience, let us call the figure we are investigating the simplest figure in four dimensions, a 4 square. First of all, we must notice that if a cube be formed from a square by the movement of the square in a new direction, each point of the interior of the square traces out part of the cube. It is not only the bounding lines that can be motion form the cube, but each portion of the interior of the square generates a portion of the cube. So if a cube were to move in the fourth dimension so as to generate a 4 square, every point in the interior of the cube would start de novo. They trace out a portion of the new figure uninterfered by the other points, which is what I was trying to state as we create greater and greater and greater cubes. Cubes could just keep going on infinitum, right? Or to look at the matter in other lights, a being in three dimensions looking down on a square sees each part of it extended before him and can touch each part without having to pass through the surrounding parts. Or he can go from above while the surrounding parts surround the part he touches only in one plane. And you can do that. You can put your finger right through a tube, right through a cube, right into another cube, right into another cube. You can just, you know, go right into the center of the universe of that dimension, if you will. So a being in four dimensions could look at the touch, could look at and touch every point of a solid figure. No one part would hinder another, for he would look at each other from a direction which is perfectly different from any in which it is possible to pass from one part of the body to another. To pass from one part of the body to another is necessary to move in three directions, but a creature in four dimensions would look at a solid from a direction which is none of these three. He would pass right through it. He could see right through it. Let us obtain a few facts about the fourth figure, proceeding according to the analogy that exists between 1, 2, 3, and 4. In the figure 1, there are 2 points. In 2, there are 4 points, the four corners of the square. In 3, there are 8 points. In the next figure, proceeding according to the same law, there would be 16 points. In the figure 1, there is one line. In the square, there are 4 lines. In the cube, there are 12 lines. How many lines would there be in the 4 square? That is to say that there are 3 numbers, 1, 4, and 12, which is the 4th, going on accordingly to the same law. And it goes on ad infinitum. To answer this question, let us trace out in more detail how the figures change into one another. The line to become the square moves. It occupies, first of all, its original position, and last of all, its final position. It starts as AB and ends as CD. Thus, the line appears twice, or it is double. The two other lines in the square, AC and BD, are formed by the motions of the points at the extremities of the moving line. Thus, in passing from the straight line to the square, the lines double themselves, and each point traces out a line. If the same procedure holds good in the case of the change of the square into the cube, we ought in the cube to have double the number of lines as in the square. That is 8. And every point at the square ought to come a line. As there are 4 points in the square, we would have 4 lines in the cube from them, which is adding to the previous 8, which should be 12 lines in the cube. This is obviously the case. Hence, we may, with confidence, to deduce the number of lines in a 4 square, apply this rule. Double the number of lines in the previous figure, and add as many lines as there are points in the previous figure. Now, in the cube, there are 12 lines and 8 points. Hence, we get 2 times 12 plus 8, or 32 lines in the 4 square. In the same way, any other question about the 4 square can be answered, we must throw aside our realizing power and answer in accordance with the analogy to be worked out from the 3 figures we know. Thus, if we want to know how many plane surfaces the 4 square has, we must commence with the line, which has none, and the square has 1, the cube has 6. Here we get the 3 numbers, 0, 1, and 6. What is the 4th? However, now, how the plane of the cube arrives, the square at the beginning of its motion determines one of the faces of the cube. At the end, it is the opposite face. All right, during the motion, each of the lines of the square traces out one plane face of the cube. Thus, we double the number of planes in this previous figure, and every line in the previous figure traces out a plane in the subsequent one. Apply this rule to the formation of a square from a line. In the line, there is no plane surface, and since twice nothing is nothing, we get, so far, no surface in the square. But in the straight line, there is one line, namely itself, and this, by its motion, traces out the plane surface of the square. So in the square, we should be, the rules give one surface. I hope I haven't lost everybody on this, but and this thing goes on. I'm going to refer you to this essay because I won't be able to finish it tonight. And I may work on this next week, so you tune into the show next week. But it's called, please go to it, it's called What is the Fourth Dimension? You can Google this up. What is the fourth dimension? Question mark. By Charles H. Hinton, 1884. Right? And read it. And there's graphics in here and so on, but simple graphics. It's very understandable, I think, anyway. But what it does is it describes the existence of the infinite of numbers and the infinite of creating that other dimension. In the next few minutes, let me skip down here and talk about the properties of matter in the fourth dimension. Having now passed and reviewed some of the properties of four-dimensional figures, it remains to ask what relations being in fourth dimensions, if they did exist, would have with us. And in the first place, being in four dimensions would have to use exactly the appearance of a being in space. A being in a plane would only know solid objects as two-dimensional figures, the shapes, namely, in which they intersected this plane. So if there were four-dimensional objects, we should only know them as solids, the solids, namely, in which they intersect our space. Why, then, should not the four-dimensional beings be observed and our successive state the passing of them through the three-dimensional space to which our conscience is confined? Let us consider the question in more detail, and for the sake of simplicity, transfer the problem to the case of three and two dimensions instead of four and three. Suppose a thread to be passed through a thin sheet of wax placed horizontally. It can be passed through in two ways. Either it can be pulled through, or it can be held at both ends and move downwards as a whole. Suppose a thread to be grasped at both ends and the hands to be moved downward perpendicularly to the sheet of wax. If the thread happens to be perpendicular to the sheet, it simply passes through it. But if the thread be held, stretched slanting-wise to the sheet, the hands are moved perpendicularly downwards, the thread will, if it be strong enough, make a slip in the sheet. If now the sheet of wax were to have the faculty of closing up behind the thread, what would appear in the sheet would be a moving hole. Suppose that instead of the sheet and thread, there were a straight line and a plane. If the straight line were placed slanting-wise in reference to the plane and moved downwards, it would always cut the plane in a point. But that point of a section would move on. And if the plane were of such a nature as to close up behind the line, if there was a nature of a fluid, what would be observed would be a moving point. If now there were a whole system of lines sloping in different directions, but all connected together and held absolutely still by one framework, and if that framework, with its system of lines, were as a whole to pass slowly through the fluid plane, as right angles to it, there would then be the appearance of a multitude of moving points in the plane, equal in number to the number of straight lines in the system. And the lines in the framework will all be moving at the same rate, namely at the rate of the framework in which they are fixed, but the points in the plane will have difficult velocities, or different velocities. They will move slower or faster according to lines to which it rise to them as more or less inclined the plane. A straight line perpendicular to the plane will, on passing through, given rise to the stationary point. A straight line that slopes very much inclined to the plane will give rise to the movement, to the point movement, with great swiftness. The motion and pass of the points would be determined by the arrangement of the lines in the system. It is obvious that if two straight lines were placed lying across one another like the letter X, and if the figure were to be stood upright and passed through the plane, what would appear would be a first two points. These two points would approach one another when the two sides of the X meet came in to the plane, the two points would become one. As the upper part of the figure base passed through, the two points would recede from one another. And almost out of here, but there's so much more to this article. Evidence of a fourth dimension. Let us now leave the supposition and framework and threats. Let us investigate the conception of a four-dimensional existence in a simpler and more natural manner, in the same way that a two-dimensional being should think about us. Not as infinite in the third dimension, but limited in three dimensions as he is in two. A being existing in four dimensions must then be thought to be as completely bounded by all four directions as we are in three. But that can say in regard to the possibility, all that can be said in the regard to possibility of such beings is that we have no experience of motion in four directions, and the powers of such beings and their experience would be ampler, but there would be no fundamental difference in the laws of force and motion. Such a being would be able to make up a part of himself visible to us, for a cube would be apprehended by a two-dimensional being as a square in which it stood. Thus, a four-dimensional being would suddenly appear as a complete and finite body and suddenly disappear, leaving no trace of himself in space and in time, and in the same way with anything lying on the flat surface. Would, on being lifted, suddenly vanished out of the cognizance of beings whose consciousness was confined to the plane. The object would not vanish by moving in any directions, but to disappear instantly as a whole. There would be no barrier, no confinement, or no devising that would not be perfectly open to him. He would become and go at pleasure. He would be able to perform feats of the most compromising kind, and it would be possible by a finite plane extending in all directions to divide our space into two portions absolutely separated from one another. But a four-dimensional being would slip around the plane with the greatest ease. I'm just about done here, and I've got another several thousand words to read on this, haven't I? So I want to refer you, please, to the to this article again, and it's called "What Is the Fourth Dimension?" by Charles H. Hinton. I believe it was written in 1884. However, if you will, it's being republished, copy text. Speculation of the Fourth Dimension, Selected Writings of Charles H. Hinton, okay, and it's copyrighted 1880, all right, so it's probably an edited, I'm sure it's an edited version of Selected Writings, so, which I would love to get, personally. I don't know if it's on Amazon or not. It was written in 1980, but maybe we could check that out. But for the meantime, I want to thank everybody who joined me tonight, and I wish you very well, and I hope that you'll go to the site join us next week.